morning, good evening, good coding campers. It's Monday, and that means it's time for NFPN Radio, the show that helps developers find what they're looking for. Good code, good conversation, but most of all, good time. So here to bring us into the week is our host, Mike Benkovich.
All right. Welcome back to another edition of NFPN Radio. I'm Mike Benkovich. It's June 21st, and we are a week after TechEd, and we're diving into what's going on in this whole technology scene. Boy, last week we had a busy week with all of the different things down in New Orleans. We had, if you want to see the sessions, you can go out to msteched.com, and actually they've got a lot of these things all recorded. Not a whole lot to talk about new releases this week, but we've had so many things going through in the last 6 months, everything from Windows 7 to the server products to SQL to Silverlight to Visual Studio to Expression. There's just so much to learn. How do you keep up with it all? That's where we've got this show and other shows that will hopefully bring you into the week, give you an idea as to what you need to do and who you need to talk to find out what's going on. I want to welcome you to this week's show, and if you want to participate in the show, you can go out and you can register for MSTN Radio by clicking on the links from mstnradio.com. That will take you then to where you can register for what's coming up. This week we've got Mark Wilson Thomas, and next week we've got Zane Nabolsi is going to be back on, and he's going to be bringing in Oleg Sich to talk about the T4 templating tool that's out there. Past shows you can get to and download from Channel 9. We've got all the recordings out there. And, in fact, I created a tinyurl.com/mstnradio. You can subscribe to the whole series and download all of the past shows and listen to them on your own time. So hopefully you'll have some fun with that. But let's dive into today's topic. I've got with me Mark Wilson Thomas. Mark, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Not too bad. Welcome to the show. And I was just kind of curious. I'm in Minneapolis, and it's starting to warm up here. What's the weather like where you are?
Well, it's unfortunately unseasonably cold up here in Redmond, Washington. We're about 10 degrees down on normal, and it's been unseasonably wet, too. So not too much fun, but, you know, we keep grinning and bearing it. We folks are pretty waterproof up here in Seattle.
Yeah, well, it's we finally got a little bit of sunshine. We had just a ton of rain. I guess, you know, the people from Minnesota, all we do is talk about the weather.
Yeah, same in Seattle, too, actually.
Yeah. Is it?
Yeah.
So the two twin cities, you know, you can say Seattle and Minneapolis.
Yeah.
I was down in Kansas City for a dev camp last week. They brought in a whole crew of people, and they had some great stuff going on, but it was definitely a warm place. Down New Orleans was a little bit warm.
Oh, man, yeah, absolutely. That was as hot as I've been for quite a while.
Now, you did a number of sessions down there. I think Dev 313 is the one where you had the full room and that you had the big stadium and everything else, right?
That's right. It was, I expected to do my Bon Jovi thing there. there was a huge theater we had down there and a great audience for Dev 313, which was a tips and tricks session on the WPF and Silverlight designer that myself and my good friend Mark Bolter did down there. We had a lot of fun and was a good audience. We had a ton of great content there that, we hope people will plug right into. The recording is up and live now, so people can go hear that and see what we have to show.
Go and download and see all the I bet that comes into, you know, your background. You are the one of the program managers for the CIDR team. Tell me what CIDR is.
So CIDR is the former code name for the WPF and Silverlight designers in Visual Studio, which is a bit of a mouthful, so internally we used to use the word CIDR. Interesting little tidbit for people that CIDR is called CIDR because we were kind of a derivative of Avalon, and if people have long memories, they'll remember that was the code name for WPF back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
And Avalon actually means the place of apples, and so apples, from apples you get cider, and, well, you get the meaning.
It's better than, like, than some other jokes we could try to go to, but, you know.
I hope we don't go there.
So you've been, how long have you been doing this Microsoft thing?
Sure. I actually joined Microsoft back in September of 2001, and I joined in Microsoft UK as part of the Microsoft Consulting Organization. I was a UI development lead over in that organization doing. Mostly large web-based UIs, but eventually when WPF started to come on the scene, I got involved in that as well. But we were doing really big projects for mm-hmm. all sorts of interesting customers, UK government, British Broadcasting Corporation, to name but a few.
Now, back in 2001, XAML wasn't even a thought yet, was it?
It was a mere pre-twinkle in a few people's eyes. Maybe Chris Anderson had already thought of it. I'm not sure. But, the whole thing came up. You know, WPF really had its genesis as Avalon, as mm-hmm. part of Longhorn when it was part of Windows back then. And it's had a long history since then, but culminating, I think, in my mind, in the new Visual Studio 2010, which is, I don't know if how many listeners are aware of this, but a large part of that user interface has been entirely reworked in WPF. So we have a very large product out there now based on WPF2.
So when I talk to people about, you know, good big examples of what WPF products are, Visual Studio and Expression and a few others are now really driving that, right?
Very much so, yes. And in fact, you know, building large products like that helps us to drive good requirements into the platform so that not just us but everyone can benefit from the gains that we've had there.
So you came from the consulting side, so you've actually built real software.
Oh, yes. Oh, absolutely. And, a couple of large sites. Nothing anybody here in the U.S. has probably heard of, but stuff that's very important to U.K. citizens. There's a couple of tax-related portals that I was involved in and national-scale learning management systems and a couple of bits and pieces like that, large web applications on the whole.
Nothing to do with the World Cup?
Really, no. Now, I'm actually not a soccer guy. It'll be a disappointment to all the World Cup fans out there, but I'm more of a rugby man myself. Since being here in the States, though, in spite of the pain of being a Mariners fan, I am actually a Mariners fan. So been quite enjoying the baseball since I've been here in the States since 2006.
So you don't do the scrum stuff anymore?
Not so much anymore, no. In fact, I used to do that when I was at school. I was in my
right.
school's rugby team, but pretty soon people started breaking collarbones, and so I got out of that game.
Decided that you could make a better life as using the technology.
Yeah, keyboards seem safer.
Yeah. Well, the picture I've got up of you has got you at the drums, so you've been playing. Looks like you have some fun with that, too.
I certainly do. I've been in various kinds of bands on and off since I was at school, and the picture you see there is actually about 10 years ago, although I'm pleased to say I do still have most of my hair, although it's a little grayer now. But I was in a covers band at my previous place of work, and we had a lot of great fun there. The biggest gig I ever played was in front of 2,000 or 3,000
wow.
sweaty British Airways employees at a function they had there. We had a wonderful time. Playing in bands is wonderful. It's one of the things I enjoyed most about being down in New Orleans is actually live music. It's one of my great passions.
Well, they definitely have live music in New Orleans.
Oh, for sure. Two gigs a night, mandatory.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, just how long do you go and hang out at those things?
Well, I mean, obviously, I was working hard on my presentation, but once that was done, I made the absolute maximum effort. In fact, I took a little vacation while I was down there, too, to get out and see the most of it.
Well, that's great. So in your sessions, you had people asking questions. What was the highlights? What were the things about the Citer Designer that seemed to resonate the most?
Well, one of the things I think that surprised people quite a bit, and that is one of the things we were trying to get a message across about during the session, was that you don't have to be a drag-and-drop guy to make use of the designer in Visual Studio 2010, that even if you're a hardcore XAML head and you never take your hands off that keyboard, you can still gain some benefits from using the designer. So, for instance, if you're building up data bindings, we have a wonderful binding picker that is a useful component in the property inspector in Visual Studio that will help you avoid making mistakes when constructing your data bindings.
Mm-hmm.
It actually exposes the whole binding API. We have partial exposure in our markup extension IntelliSense, but the key IntelliSense side of things, so the right-hand side of those binding expressions, we have that picker that will help you out with that, and it lets you know a bunch of the options there. Also, in terms of finding your way around an application, application. So it's like finding where symbols are defined and that kind of stuff. There's a bunch of really useful stuff that is in the property inspector, things like brush editors, margin editors, that just make it a whole lot easier to remember what things are and get a handy editing experience, even when you're only using XAML, because we synchronize your XAML selection with the property inspector. We show a couple tips, actually, in the talk about how to make sure that that works well for you. So people should really hit that up, and it might be a surprise to you if you've said, oh, I'll never use that designer thing, then actually you may well have a good reason to do it. But the other thing that was in that talk was we went through the entire experience that is now available to people in Visual Studio 2010. One thing that surprises some people who've been around for a while is if they haven't realized that we actually have a full interactive designer for Silverlight applications as well as WPF. It's actually pretty much the same designer.
So it's not editing XML anymore?
No, that's right. Yeah, you can actually you actually do a little bit of drag and drop if that's your fancy, and more than that, we have all of the application scaffolding features that that you've come to know and love if you're a Windows Forms or ASP.NET person. So the data sources window works now both for Silverlight and WPF to create the application scaffolding that you want to get right at the start of an application, help you make less mistakes in building that. Then we have, as I mentioned, the binding picker, which helps you really customize data bindings. So for people who don't necessarily know, data bindings are an absolutely critical part of any WPF or Silverlight application. If you're not using binding, you're probably doing something wrong.
Right.
And so we've got a lot of focus in the designer around building and debugging good bindings. Then the resource picker, which lets you pick out styles, so you can make your app look a little less dull and be consistent in the process. Plus some debugging features too.
So along that resource picker, I think that's one of the things I show people that I just get excited about is that in the resource picker, when you click on it, you can say extract what I've got here to a resource. And
that's right. Yes. Yeah, so you can make an extraction of resources, and you can put those anywhere you like for reuse later, and then you can find and pick them. And we have a nice little handy-dandy search thing in there that lets you find things by name. We try and give you a little preview if we can as well, so that you get a visual hint as to what it is you're going to get before you get it.
Mm-hmm. Well, we do have a live audience here with us today, too, and if you're dialed into the call and you've got the number, you can press the *8 to let me know that you've got a question. And right now I see we've got a question out here, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to bring him in so that he can ask a question. And this is Paul from Minnesota. Paul, are you there?
I am there, Mike. Good morning.
Hey, how are you doing, Paul?
Doing great. Doing great. Hey, Mark, thanks so much for being here. I got to tell you, I'm much more of a hands-on, like edit the XAML by hand kind of guy.
Uh-huh.
I just discovered the property editor yesterday. I was going to make a suggestion. And boy, wouldn't that be cool? And it's like, son of a gun, it's already there.
Yep.
But I've got a couple of quick thoughts here because I've been trying to work with the MVVM pattern a little bit more.
Yep.
And I don't know if this is in there. Maybe you can enlighten me. But can you specify in the data context for, let's say, the visual route on a Silverlight page, can you specify just a class, like a view model class, or class that I'm using as my view model, so that we can highlight inside the XAML with like blue squigglies or something when you can't find a property?
Yes, absolutely, and this is something that there's an excellent tip, and this is a good segue to talk about our blog. So there's an address you all need to know, and that's blogs.msdn.com/WPFSLDesigner, or one word. And if you head up there, you'll find that there's an article by my colleague Carl Shiflett, and he has an article there which was authored on June 14th. It's called How to Enable Using the Binding Builder in WPF and Silverlight Applications, and it talks about using some of our design time data features to do exactly what you're talking about. So there's this notion of a D-design instance, which lets you point at a class that is perhaps your MVVM, some part of your view model, or maybe all of your view model. So depending on how you're doing that, Carl actually talks through exactly how to wire that up in that blog. blog article there. And what that will do for you is it actually makes the binding picker that I've been mentioning light up. So the idea that we had was that we want to help people to get their bindings right first time so that they don't have to spend too much time debugging them. And the binding picker helps you do that. But, of course, if you're the kind of person who wires up their view model in code behind, you know, you have a little line that basically sets that data context to a view model, then our designer really knows nothing about it until you give it a hint. And that's what this de-design instance stuff does. So if you hit up the blog, you'll see a full set of instructions on exactly how to do that. And what that will let you do is use the picker to construct your bindings, and it'll let you – although it's a great suggestion that you have there that we could give you some more squiggly action in terms of you've messed up on a binding too. And I'll take that into account. So one of the things I'm going to say to everyone on the call is, hey, we'd love to hear your suggestions for future releases, and that sounds like a good one that we'd be able to use that to give you more information about bad bindings where we can do that. But hopefully that'll help you get them right in the first place and not have to worry about debugging them. Does that make sense?
That is fabulous. And yet on the idea of the blue squigglies, not I'll call them red squigglies, where it's a hard and fast compiler, just like a, hey, I can't really find this.
Yep, we do exactly that, actually, in the binding picker. So if we can't resolve the name that you're using, it may be valid. It may just be that we're not smart enough to understand why it's valid, because obviously we don't know everything about everything, so we only know what you tell us. And but the picker will absolutely highlight things that it doesn't understand. So as you say, maybe a sort of partial complete. That's a cool idea. I like that.
Super. Mike, do I have time for one more quick one, or are you guys pressed?
Go ahead.
Okay. The other thought was, so here's just a thing that I've been wrestling with the past week. So I have list boxes that go, obviously, vertically, up and down, and I wanted my list boxes to go across, horizontally.
Mm-hmm.
A thought in the designer to say, hey, you know what, can we, on a control like a list box or something, where you could say, hey, there's some standard variations to this behavior. Could you do something like pick almost, I call it a transformer, but something that alters the way this looks in a standard
mm-hmm.
kind of a way? Because when I was out researching how you make a horizontal list box, there's
mm-hmm.
three or four implementations out there, and none of them is actually quite right.
Yep.
They all vary just a little bit. And so something like that to standardize the look and feel and interaction with some standard controls without having to reinvent whole new controls.
Right. So, I mean, we've actually heard this from several folks that
okay.
for some of the common controls that are out there, going ahead and retemplating, which is obviously something you can do with pretty much any WPF control, is a little bit more than a lot of the time you want to take on. Although it's a whole lot easier than I used to be a Windows Forms developer, and I don't know if you remember the nightmares of owner draw, but basically it's a whole lot easier to retemplate a WPF or Silverlight control than it used to be to do that. But even then, in some of the common cases like the one you're mentioning, it would be nice to have some of that stuff just as something you can switch, maybe using a property on the control. And that's definitely something we're hearing. So if people have ideas for particular things that are such a common pattern for them that they would like to see that, and you've mentioned one, then go ahead and hit me up on you'll see my Twitter address is going to be it's actually Mark Parv WT, and we'll explain the Parv later, but it's if you hit me up on there with those, I'll take those suggestions and hit them up on the list that we're creating for future versions.
Outstanding. Mark, thank you so much. I appreciate it. You guys are doing a great job with us.
Hey, thank you so much.
Thanks for being on the show there, Paul. And if other people have questions, you can go ahead and just press the star 8 to let me know you've got a question. I do have a question in the queue from Andre, who's actually not in the U.S., so he's not able to dial in. But he was wondering, where can he get to a big code sample gallery for WPF applications? So where's the best place to find some examples and some code?
So there are a number of places that you can go, Andre, to find that kind of thing. Obviously, I'm going to say go hit up our blog as well. We have a couple of samples up there. If you are a Silverlight developer or a WPF developer, we have a couple of walkthroughs that are up there. In fact, there's one that we put together for the Tech Ed talk that we did called Building a Simple Forms Application Using the Silverlight Tools for Visual Studio 2010 and WCF RIA Services. That actually has code attached to that and a full walkthrough of how we constructed it. And you know, there's actually a couple of samples like that on our site, which go through the basics of building up a WPF and Silverlight application. My buddy Carl Schifflet's blog has a number of sample applications there as well, so he's on WordPress. CarlSchifflet.wordpress.com has a number of useful sort of samples up there as well. You might also want to hit up CodePlex. There are sample, actual real-world applications out there that you know, people have constructed that people put up on CodePlex too. So Fishbowl, which is a kind of useful Facebook application, that's up there, and there are a couple of others that are worthy of mention too. So Family Show is the oldest and still most venerable WPF sample application that's around too. So you might want to check that one out too. Lots of them use different kinds of patterns, so it really depends on what kind of work you're trying to do. So lots of people want to know stuff about the MVVM pattern, for instance. For there, you could you won't do much better than hitting up Carl's blog there as well for that kind of thing. I hope that helps.
Yeah, well, when I look at that too, it's like the Silverlight Toolkit and some of those other ones have examples of additional controls that you can plug in, and it's got a pretty good.
Oh, absolutely, blog. Yeah.
Now, your blog is it's blogs.mstn.com/WPFSLDesigner. You guys put links on there as well?
We do, yeah. I mean, at the moment, we've been focusing on putting up articles that help people to use the new designer features. But we will certainly be doing a little bit of linkage there to good stuff too. Yeah, absolutely, that's something we plan to do. So we have a number of sections on that site. Some of them are aimed at people learning afresh, so we have a learn section. There's an FAQ up there, a bunch of common questions too. So anything that we start to hear about that that seems good that we want design users to know about, then we're going to we'll put links and articles up there to highlight them.
So on your blog, you've got a number of different tags, so they can go out and find how to and all the other things.
That's right, absolutely, yeah. So there's quite a bit that's just even in the last month or so, there's quite a bit of new content that's just arrived on that blog.
Yeah, it looks like you've been posting about three or four times a week.
Yeah.
Between you and Carl.
That's my buddy Carl, who's he's been quite prolific in the last few weeks, and yeah, really that's been driven by a couple of things. One is that now that we've finished the shipping Visual Studio 2010 and also the Silverlight 4 tools, which I really need to mention to all of our listeners that if you're using the Visual Studio 2010 designer for WPF or Silverlight usage, you really need to get hold of those Silverlight 4 tools, because they have a bunch of new features that are there for both the WPF and for the Silverlight user, and also a few bug fixes in there that apply to both platforms as well. So having just finished those, we decided that it would be a good thing to get some content out there that wouldn't necessarily find its way into the help files or other locations. So we've put it out on the blog.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah, I mean, the challenge is trying to find where you can get help and get information on all that. So people can use your Twitter account, markpav@WTE.
That's right, yep.
On Twitter. And then there's also, you had a forums listed out there.
That's right, yeah. Now, that's really the very best place to interact with myself and the team, because we do monitor that forum regularly. You'll see a bunch of responses from me on Threads there and other team members. So we monitor that forum fairly regularly, and that's a place where you can go to just ask general questions. You may think you might have a bug, and you're not quite sure whether it is a bug or not, so you don't want to necessarily go and raise it on Connect yet. Go and hit up the forums, find out if it's a bug, and we'll give you a steer there. We'll give you workarounds, common actions, and often we find ourselves pointing to the FAQs on the blog too, so well worth having a read there too. So, but that forum's a great place to interact with us.
Does the blog point you to the forums?
It should, and if you can't find a link to that, then I'll go ahead and fix that.
Okay. Yeah, because that would be a great way to, you know, have a common place you go to and then be able to drive right out to it.
That's right, yeah.
So let's come back to the PAV here, the PAV part of your Twitter. Where does that come from?
Well, it's a long story, but to cut it short, here in the designer team, we have two British marks, and both of us, in fact, were the guys who gave that talk at TechEd, Dev 313. Mm-hmm. There's myself and Mark Bolter, and Mark is actually has been in my manager for a while here on the team, and it was a bit of a problem when people were saying, hey, Mark, the two of us would both lift our heads, and obviously we needed some kind of nickname. Now, I was the junior guy on the team because Mark Bolter's been around forever, so I was the one who drew the short straw and had to had to use a nickname. So the Parv thing comes, if people check out the picture, you can see an embryonic version of the beard that I now have.
Uh-huh.
Apparently there was some passing resemblance to a now-dead Italian opera star, which led to the Parv as in Pavarotti thing.
So did the beard come as a result of joining the this team, or was it there as a part of the rugby piece?
Yeah, you know, beards are mandatory for rugby players. That's how it works. Yeah, no, I've had the beard for a little while, since before I joined Microsoft. That was actually something that happened one time when I was not feeling too bright. I had a dose of the flu, didn't shave for a while, and suddenly realized that actually I never had liked shaving. So,
yeah.
You know how it goes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I go to the conferences and I come back needing to shave too, so.
Yeah, yeah. It now saves me the trouble.
Mm-hmm. So what else? We've got the Visual Studio. The next version is going to be coming out. How can people give you input? What kind of things have you been hearing about? What should we be, you know, hoping for,
sure,
looking for in future versions?
So, I mean, both Blend, Blend have just shipped Blend 4, and my team has just shipped Visual Studio 2010 and also the Silverlight 4 tools that I was mentioning.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're all pretty much now in the point where we're listening very carefully to customer feedback to find out what we should put in future releases of the designers. So it's very important for us to understand, you know, what is it that people are banging their heads on? You know, what kinds of tasks are you finding yourself doing that you just say to yourself, well, gosh, I really wish the tool would help me with this. It's a repetitive task, or there's something that could really be improved here, and I'd like the tool to give me a hand here. So one of the things that you know, we do hear from people, for instance, is that they'd like some help making their UI look more spiffy, if you want, for want of a better word, more consistent and good looking, without them necessarily having to go hire a visual designer to go help them with that. And that's one piece of feedback that we've had from customers, is that they'd like to see Visual Studio help them out with that.
Mm-hmm.
But they'd like to see things like a template editor in Visual Studio. And there are a bunch of other things that people do bring up from time to time, like, for instance, the mentioning of simplified modes on controls that we heard earlier on.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that's come up too. But one of the great things about working on a product team is that you never can tell what customers are going to do with your product. And so we're really listening hard now. And so the forums that we mentioned earlier, the social MSDN Microsoft.com forums, and my Twitter are great ways to get in touch with us and let us know about the things that are important to you.
Well, I guess that's one of the things that the first time I came to one of your sessions, I was really amazed because you had everyone, you handed out a lot of sticky notes.
That's right, yeah.
And you're kind of known as, hey, tell me what features you want, and if the feature's not there, you have to take one off the board or which
that's
one
right,
would
yeah. We make people pick and choose because that's what we have to do, you know. There's,
right.
There's only so many people on the team, and we can only build so many features in a release. So what we try to have people do is to understand that anytime you ask us to build something, that means something else won't get built. So we have that little game that we play with the post-it notes, which lets you choose just the way that we do exactly how features are going to get built. And you know, it's proven very useful as a way of getting feedback from people. So yeah, we love that game. And anyone who comes along to an interactive theater session or a feedback session of mine at a show will no doubt get to play it for real.
Yeah, and you know, that just kind of speaks to the fact that you've built real software, real projects, and been in the real world with scope creep.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Because you can't do everything.
You can never do everything. It certainly can't do everything well, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So we would far rather do the two or three top things that are much more important to people than do the 15 things and do them not so well.
Do you find that you have a lot of collaboration among the product groups? So, like, for instance, inside of Visual Studio, they adopted the style sheet management pieces that came out of the Expression web piece. and they kind of, you know, so that now you've got kind of a very similar experience between the two products. Are you seeing the same thing with the blend?
Oh yes, absolutely. Yes, we are, and you know, we work very closely with the with our colleagues on the blend team, and you know, I think you can expect to see that be an ever closer relationship going forward. We work hard to make sure that there's a consistent experience across tools wherever we can. And we're certainly learning from one another in terms of things that have worked in one place that might work in another.
Wow. Well, Mark, I really appreciate you coming on the show today. I mean, and people know how to get in touch with you because they can go out to the blog and blogs.msdn.com/WPFSLDesigner, or they can follow you on Twitter and get in touch with you. It sounds like, you know, the challenge is going to be trying to figure out how to top the product that you just came out with.
Well, I'm very glad people feel that way, and we're really proud of what we've produced this time round. But we'd love to top it, and you guys can definitely help us out with that with great feedback that'll help us to understand what the next problem we need solved is.
Well, someone in the field who's helping people explore the possible and showing off what you can do with this product, and actually even just using it. I want to say you guys did a tremendous job, and I'm real excited about where we're going with this, especially with the fact that Silverlight is, you know, and the WPF and the XAML is now being used not just for the rich client, not just for the web, not just for Silverlight, but also the phone and other places too. So it's an exciting place to be.
It sure is, and thanks ever so much for the kind words.
Oh, yeah. Well, next week we're going to have Oleg Sich and Zane Nabolsi is going to be on, and we're going to be kind of having a show where we'll drive through what's going on with the T3, the template editor. It's going to be a lot of fun. And so we're going to have that up here. I'll be providing the links for the show on msdnradio.com. And if you want to subscribe to the series, go out to MSDN Radio. And there's a link to be able to download and listen to the whole thing on your Zune or on your iPod or whatever have you. But I want to say thank you for coming on to the radio show today. And we'll talk to you next week on MSDN Radio.
So that's it for this Monday. Go to msdnradio.com and click the registration link if you want to participate in the next show. Until then, happy coding.